7:21, 21 past the hour. Illinois State Representative Terry Bryant's joining us this morning. Terry, long time no see. How have you been?
I'm good. In fact, yesterday was my birthday, so I wanted to be sure and thank everyone this morning for all the well wishes, and could not have been a more beautiful day.
Yeah, had a good one. The investigation in the House, Mike Madigan, been watching this closely. Well, we have to make sure we don't get in the way of the investigation. You can call witnesses, but you can't ask them questions. One of the stupidest things I've ever heard. And then the investigators go, no, go ahead, do your investigation. You're fine. I've been watching this. You have been, too. Your takeaways on this, and the issue, of course, with the GOP is a breach of trust on the part of the speaker.
Well, certainly. I do think that the federal investigators, I think that we'll see an indictment. I'm not an attorney, remember that, but I do think that we'll see an indictment probably after the election. There's a bit of an unwritten rule, a gentleman's agreement, if you will, that there won't be anything that you do not charge someone prior to an election. But after the election, I think the feds have been meticulous. They've been going through this with a fine-tooth comb. And if people want to know how this all works out, take a look at the Speaker of the House in New York, who just a few months back, I believe, was sentenced to 18 months in prison, second longest-serving speaker in U.S. history. So, I don't have a crystal ball, but I do think that, we heard Vlad Blagojevich, as crazy as that gentleman is, say a while back of Speaker Madigan. He didn't understand why he wasn't taking it more serious. This is a paraphrase, of course, because when you are a public official, A, you are the investigation. So I think we all can be confident in how this may unfold in the future.
How, just hypothetically, if the speaker did step down or whatever the case he was going, who would be the next speaker, do you think? Who would you be willing to vote for in the House?
Well, I'd have to see who was offered. You might remember that way in the 70s, Clyde Choate, who was a Democrat, actually made the nomination for a Republican. And I would really love to see the House return to a more bipartisan fashion. So I would hope that we could, even if we had just some small groups of individuals who got together and put up someone in a bipartisan fashion, that would be awesome. There are one or two Democrats, I think. I don't know if they rise to where I would vote for them, but certainly Chris Welch has positioned himself very well to take the speakership. I think Natalie Manley, certainly if we were going to have a woman, would be someone that maybe the Democrats would put up as a speaker, and both of those two individuals are on the investigating committee.
You know, it's interesting, COVID-19, that Senator Paul Shimp in particular has been taking exception with some of the governor's activities. He believes that we're using the wrong metric, that we shouldn't be using cases, positive cases. We should be using hospitalization. Your thought?
Yeah, I agree. That is one aspect. We just recently found out during the update from IDPH to the Region 4 representatives and senators that they have not been using the numbers from Barnes Jewish Hospital, which could make a significant impact on the Region 4 numbers. The other issue is there's been roughly 25 to 50 individuals either incarcerated or in mental health facilities in Region 4, which is the Metro East and Randolph County. And that's where Chester and Chester Mental Health is. It also includes Alton Mental Health, the Murray Center, Centralia Correctional Center, Southwestern Correctional Center. If you take those numbers out of the mix, Region 4 might not be in mitigation right now. And I'm suspicious, to tell you the truth, of how they've put those numbers together. So, you know, we all want to be safe. And again, I would encourage people to wear their masks, but it looks like the numbers in Region 4 might be setting up for failure.
It's interesting, the story out of Nashville, the information leaking out that the bars and the restaurants weren't the problem, and they kept that to themselves so that they could move on with their plans the way they were. So suspicion is growing every day, and we give it the legitimacy as well. You know, it's interesting, we're running a story this morning about bailing out Illinois, where Indiana representatives in Congress in Washington say, look, we benefit a lot from the craziness of Illinois, their words, not mine. You know, when it comes to bailing out, and when we look at money that's come from Washington, D.C., to help the state, in particular the Cure Funds. Still no money's been distributed, to my knowledge. Can you correct me on that? Have you seen any of your communities? Because I know you got a letter from the DCEO about 2 weeks ago today, I believe it was.
Well, we keep hearing that money is going to be distributed, and we keep hearing that money is going to be distributed equally. But I think that maybe the folks at DCEO and I have a different idea of what distributing equally is. And let's remember that it should be distributed equitably, not equally. And equitably means the places that need it the most get it. And I don't think that any of your listeners would disagree when I say that deep Southern Illinois is in deep trouble right now, and we really need that help. So obviously, whatever help comes, we want to see it distributed equitably. And I think in that case, we would see a lot of the money. I really don't think that anyone should be expecting at this point that Washington is going to bail us out. There are other states that have done a much better job of managing their money than Illinois has. That isn't to say that we don't need some money from the federal government, but I don't see an appetite from other states who have managed their money well to bail out Illinois. So we're going to have to go back November 17th. I'd love to go back earlier, and we are pleading for that, to go back prior to then and try to fix some of the problems that we have with our budget. We know that we're $5 billion over for this year's budget, and I think evidenced by the fact that none of the Southern Illinois legislators except Nathan Wright voted for the budget. So, I think that we need to be looking at what's happening with that budget and go fix it without a federal bailout.
5 to 10% cut, says the governor.
Well, 10% isn't going to cut it, because if you think about it, we know our revenue is going to be somewhere around $37.5 billion, maybe $38 billion if things turned around quickly. Our budget is $42 billion. Last year it was $40 billion, so this one's $2 billion more than last year. And there were no needs for cuts last year. How does how does 10% get us? It doesn't even get us the $2 billion that we need to get us back to where we were last year. And last year's budget was counting on a bailout from the federal government that came. It was $1.5 billion, but then COVID hit. So, I'm sorry, I think it was $2 billion. But then COVID hit, and now we're in a mess again. So, obviously, we're going to have to make some cuts, and I don't think people are going to like those cuts at all. But, I think the taxpayers probably, those whose pockets are being hit, will be hit. And Tom, I know you've got a bunch of stuff you want to talk about, but I want to tell folks also this letter that they got from Jesse White's office, from the Secretary of State's office.
Got one.
I don't know if it was purposely deceptive. I suspect that it was purposely deceptive in the way that it was written. But I want people to know you do not have to do mail-in voting. That letter makes it sound like that's your only option. It is not. You still have 40 days starting on Thursday that you can go in and early vote, and you certainly can still vote on Election Day.
All right. Now, we just talked about the lack of money, but, you watch the tube and you can't hardly see it go very long on the Internet at all without seeing a fair tax ad pop up. And the governor's been saying, look, we're going to have to cut, or we're going to need the fair tax to be able to balance the books.
Well, that in itself ought to tell you that it's a massive tax increase. I think I've been on here before and said we cannot advocate for or against, because it's a constitutional question on the ballot. But I can tell you I voted no for putting it on the ballot, and I'll be voting no on November 3rd, as will my husband and my children and any of my close family that I've been able to talk to. Here's the deal. Many of the listeners know that in the past I did vote for an income tax increase. Here's the difference between that one and this one. I had to come home and answer to every voter in my district, every voter, and tell them why I did it and explain why I thought it was necessary. With a progressive income tax or graduated income tax, a fair income tax, whatever you want to call it, the fact is you can manipulate those brackets in a way that you have very few people to answer to. That's dangerous. When you do a tax increase, you should have to come back home again and answer to everyone. And it should be something that is politically and personally dangerous for someone to do. So I think people should keep that in mind. Do you really want to give the legislators, with the way the legislatures are set up at this point, do you want to give them more money? or do you want them to go and be more responsible for the money that they have?
You know, some people speculated one of the reasons why you and some of the other downstate legislators did not have outright Democratic opponents, now third party, yes, was to suppress the vote for the fair tax by not having opponents, that they wouldn't be going to the poll in such numbers as to, you know, to overwhelm and win to disapprove the fair tax. Had you heard that?
Well, I have heard. I'd like to believe that I didn't have one because I'm such an awesome legislator. But setting that aside, that sounds a little bit like straight out of a Mike Madigan playbook. Suppress the vote any way you can and then say that the Republicans are suppressing the vote. People, this is maybe one of the most important elections of our lifetime. And I know people say that every election, but we have a Supreme Court election as well right now, not just for legislators. And that the Supreme Court under Justice Lloyd Carmire has been cleaned up in a way that we never thought could happen in this legislative district, in the Supreme Court district. Justice David Overstreet is handpicked by Justice Carmire specifically to do the same thing, to continue to appoint constitutionally sound judges who rule on what is right by the law. And I think that I hope to see people get out to vote in regard to the Supreme Court as well as all of the legislators that are on the ballot. That's a contested race, and I think one of the most important in the country, so that we don't go back to a judicial hellhole in Madison County. David Overstreet's the guy that's going to help us keep that from happening.